Your martial arts movie podcast.
Ha ha! I threw that shit before I walked in the room!
Featuring drunken Thai boxer, Will.
Too bad you will die.
The also drunken wrestler, Mark.
I said I don't want trouble!
And drunken karate master, Zero.
You've lost your boss.
And now...
Call.
I know kung fu.
You know, baby.
Fists of Fail. What a bait and switch opener for a movie. That opening fight scene is not indicative of anything that happens in the movie.
Well, it doesn't even relate to anything in the movie.
It really doesn't.
It feels like a short film almost. You know, like a gap. Like it's just like a. It's like one of those cold openers of a sitcom, cold right? Opener. Like yeah. The Office did, where the joke has no relevance to the storyline. It's just a really, really quick, funny gag. But in this movie, Vengeance of an Assassin, the opening gag is, what if we did Shaolin Soccer, but with the Thai stunt team?
Yeah. You referenced The Office. I think more like a Simpsons couch gag. It's like, it's so non sequitur. It literally has nothing to do with the rest of the movie. But what a great way to start
film. Yeah.
It is so it's amazing. I mean, I love Shaolin Soccer, but this blows that out of the water, because there's so much of this that's actually them handling a real soccer ball. I mean, some of it's CG, but some of the things that they're doing, it's very impressive. But anyways, we're jumping way ahead into the action department already. So, Vengeance of Assassin. You recommended this. We're finally escaping the Hong Kong sphere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've been talking about a lot of Hong Kong movies because
mainland China.
Mainland China, yes, correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of Chinese films in general, because that's basically 98% of Haya's repertoire. So I'm glad we're branching out a little bit. Haya has some other things, at least. Very interesting film. It's good for the most part. I was engaged for the most part, you know, as I was watching the film. It's not perfect, but I was very impressed with the film. You know, there are a lot of like technical achievements it was able to make, and it's another Pineapple Cry film.
Yeah, I really like this movie, but it's not his best work, and I feel that maybe it's not his best work because this is technically his last film. He passed away the same, I think, in July, and this film was released in November. So I'm curious how much he was actually able to really get in there before he started getting ill and, you know, maybe was not able to actually work on the film. Maybe this is everything, but, you know, I don't know that information.
Yeah. Okay. I guess the question is if he completely wrapped up all production, right? Or do you think like another director took over part ways? Because I do find some of the action's pretty good. It just sometimes the movie feels a little inconsistent, especially towards the end. I don't like the ending.
It gets really rushed, and then this fucking story. This is like one of the worst put together narratives I've sat through. Even upon second rewatching, I was so confused.
Oh, yeah?
What was going on? Yeah, even though I knew the story, the whole first act, I was like, what does this have to do with anything? I was like so frustrated with it, especially because it opens so beautifully with a bunch of guys beating the shit out of each other over a soccer ball.
Yeah. Well, that's just the dream sequence. Let's just lay that out there. It's just a dream sequence. It's a great way to start your movie, but it's not at all how the rest of the film is going to be. In fact, it's the action time like cranked up to 11. If anything, I'd say that if that was Pineapple Cry's swan song, it is quite a swan song because it's great. But I'll take the reins. I think I'll talk about the story. So the movie is about a character named Thi. Thee, played by Dan Chupang, who we've covered before. I'm blanking on.
He's in Born to Fight.
There you go. Born to Fight. That was what it was. And also his brother, who's more of a supporting character, Nantawut Bunsaprap. We'll just call him Woot because that's who he played in Power Kids, another movie that we covered.
Man, he aged so much in 4 years. Like, he became 4 years, yeah. He just became like an adult man all of a sudden. I had no idea that was him when I looked on IMDb. I was like, holy shit, that was Woot. Oh, man.
This actor averages a movie every 4 to 5 years, and he's only been in 3 films, but he's quite talented for the most part. So, yeah, we're basically almost done with his catalog of films. Anyways, but primarily the movie's about Dan Chupang, right? And these two are brothers who are under the care of their uncle. I don't think it's a biological uncle, but it is just not. Call him an uncle. And they've always been questioning, like, whatever happened to their parents. And one of them, Dan Chupang, assumes that they were assassins. So he goes the route of becoming assassins. So he leaves them.
That is right? So unclear to me that he does that. He's like, hey, I'm going to the city. Oh, hey, look, here's the monk. Yes, I knew your parents once. Okay, we never see him again. He goes to a graveyard. Some other guy's like, I knew your parents once too. Let's become assassins. Oh, now I'm gonna die immediately in the next scene. And you have no idea what Dan Chupang is really up to after that. It's so confusing.
Yeah, you know what the confusing thing about that segment of the film is, that the sense of time is completely out the window. You have no idea how much time has passed as this is happening. Yeah. Like, this is over 2 weeks. He goes from not knowing anything about his parents and the outside world to becoming a masterful assassin who is now, like, contracted to kill people. But on that note, he is hired to kill, at first, this one girl, but he is set up for... No, he's basically set up, right? So he's double-crossed. So instead of killing her, he ends up saving her from a bunch of other assassins. I also found that part really confusing. Like, it's not explained well, but then I had to rewind it and watch that again. See, what if a movie makes you have to rewind it to understand it, especially an action film, I think that's a problem.
Yeah, no, it very much is. And I'm making assumptions here. Was she being chased after by these assassins because of her links to her father, who was some sort of senator?
See, I don't know.
There's one sentence I saw in the subtitle saying something along the lines like, oh, her father's a senator. And then later in the movie, the villain says something along the lines of, she's worth, like, millions to me. That's why we're, you know, trying to kill her or hold her hostage. That's what I thought. But I was so confused the whole movie. I was like, wait, why do they want to protect her?
Yeah. Oh, you were staggering just now. You were like, you know, kill or take her. And the movie was a little confusing for me because at the beginning, for the most part, actually, the majority of the film, the assassins are trying to kill her. Mm-hmm. And then somehow, partway into the movie, they go from trying to kill her to taking her in alive. And I was very confused by that. It's like, why did they change their strategy? I don't understand.
I don't know. I don't know. Like, it's funny because when you give the general premise of this movie, like, once you get all of Dan Chupang and Woot's story out of the way, because that stuff is told really, like, messy. In the beginning.
Yeah.
Once you realize, like, okay, Dan Chupang, he is an assassin that was set up and now he's protecting this woman. It's like, okay, sure, that makes sense. But then they don't really tell you why he's protecting a woman. He's just doing it because.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It could just be because he was double-crossed, but that's really no other real reason.
Yeah, and, yeah. Like, he could just split.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
basically. I don't understand why he sticks around with her. But yeah, the, you know, it's movie. They he did it. They needed lines like, oh, you can clear my name, or you could do something, so we're gonna stick together, you know, so on and so forth. But they never do anything like that. They're just together because the movie makes them be together.
Yeah, out of the kindness of his heart, because the power of love and all that shit.
Midway through the movie, he shouldn't have a heart anymore. It should just be filled with straw.
Wait, what are you trying to say? I don't know what you mean by that.
That's kind of a spoiler, so I'll elaborate more on that later.
All right, I think that joke's going over my head somehow. So we'll elaborate on that a little bit more in the Patreon section. But I do find the movie very disjointed in terms of the narrative, like you mentioned before. It's not it's not terrible, but for such a simple premise, it's not told the most straightforward.
Well, that's the problem. And a lot of times people are like, oh, when it comes to the action movie, like, oh, I don't care about the story. I just want the action. Give me the action. Sure, I get that. But you want your narrative to be understandable so you can follow the beats so that you can understand, like, okay, you know, here's your action stuff to break up the narrative, to break up the talking heads. When I'm confused by the narrative and then the action scene comes, sometimes I'm distracted because I'm confused about what I was watching beforehand.
Well, I've never been a big fan of that kind of mentality. It's like, I just want the action. I don't care about the story. It's like, well, you still want a good movie. The story's not that complicated when you really break it down. But it's not told the best. In terms of the action, it is actually very impressive for the most part. It's a lot of practical stuff on screen, and when it isn't, it's a shame.
So this is Panavida Cry, you know, famous for Born to Fight, and my personal favorite, which is BKO, Bangkok Knockout. And
that's right.
He, the amount of action and physical pain he puts on screen is amazing. And it's kind of a shame. I almost feel the Thai action movie scene kind of died with him.
That's not an exaggeration. It very much did. And I feel like no real director has since been able to recapture his kind of ability. I mean, I feel like every industry, for the most part, like every country as of late has, like, they have their like gold standard. And I feel like Panavida Cry was like right up there. Like, look at Tony Jaa. Like, I don't think he had any success outside of Panavida Cry's movies. And I know that's a hot take. Success isn't like actually showing off his ability.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, he has personal success because he's doing movies outside, you know, I believe that's what he wanted. I think there's only so many kicks to the head you can take in these Thai films where you're like, yeah, I think I would rather just act and maybe do some martial arts, you know, like I don't want to get like tossed to the ground by these giant white, you know, Europeans.
Panavida Cry was, let me rephrase that in a better light. Panavida Cry was always able to get the most out of his performers. And it makes it so cinematic in almost every way. And it definitely shows itself in this film as well. I love everything, even outside of the actual martial arts, which is not a ton of, actually, compared to like his other outings. But there's a lot of action in the movie, and even that I find very interesting because
at least from my knowledge, this is maybe like one of the first times where he really puts in a lot of gun work. I haven't seen a lot of his older films, but is very gun heavy. It feels very John Woo inspired, heroic bloodshed. Mm-hmm. And then a very obvious Matrix nod later.
Yeah.
But like there's so many references. Like maybe that's what he's doing, because there's the Shaolin Soccer, there's the Matrix, there's John Woo stuff. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's just, you know, showing his influences on screen in his last act.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, no, of course. I guess it's not even that. Obviously all that's impressive, but he's I think he even took, he was trying to like one up some of the things that he's done in the past, right? So take Tom Yong Goon, like that oneer, and it's like, okay, well, instead of having one oneer, we're going to have two oneers in the movie, and we're going to make them amazing gunfights. One's significant. I found one significantly more enjoyable than the other one.
One is really strange because it's a very low camera angle.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. we're seeing a lot of feet.
Yes.
Tarantino made a oneer.
It's like, well, it's not a woman then.
That's true.
I do find both of them very interesting because, at first the second one's not as interesting, but once it gets to the pyrotechnics, it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It's a lot of...
I think that's what's great about this movie is, we're in the 2010s now at this point. Everything's going to have CGI. You can't escape it, unfortunately. I think they do it right, at least in some of the action scenes. Because in the one takes, which is more gunplay stuff, the bullets, the muzzle flares, those are all CGI, generally. Yep. But at least they set up the pyrotechnics all over their set so that it looks real. Because you have papers flying over the place, all over the place. You have things exploding. You have pieces of the wall coming out. So I don't even notice that they're not really shooting the gun because the environment is reacting to all of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Outside of that, I love the practical effects with the blood. There's actual squibs that can be used throughout the film. And it looks very nice at times. So when the CGI blood is, the digital blood is being used, it really stands out,
right.
And I kind of wish they went another route. And I think we can talk about that even more in detail in the action segment, because there's certain moments where I kind of wish it didn't happen, but you can understand why they had to do that because of the very complicated technical aspects of the filmmaking. I definitely would love to talk more about this in detail, but I don't know. Is there anything else, from a general standpoint at the film, before we dive into the film more?
So, it's funny because we've been watching a few movies now where we keep on saying that, there's so many big body hits, stuntmen go down, and it lacks the choreography, the small combinations in between. And I feel that the Thai industry and Panna as well kind of popularized that. Maybe they didn't popularize that. I don't know if that's incorrect. At least in my mind, that's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm watching this compared to how these mainland Chinese films do it, the synergy between the Thai martial arts actor and the stunt team to make those body hits look painful. Is so on point, so much more than what mainland China is doing. Because, yes, you can hit a stuntman and they'll go down. And, yes, they're really getting hit. Sure, that looks a little painful. But the way the Thai stunt guys just fall sometimes and take those blows, they sell it even more. They sometimes oversell it. There's a lot of overselling in this movie at times when people, overreact. And it pulls you away. But when they do get those big hits... And you just see foot to face, it sells so much better than what we've been seeing now, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. It's such a shame.
Yeah. And that's one thing that I feel more recent action movies just lack. When I say recent, I really mean, post Gareth Evans era of action movies, a lot of movies, even if they're great they showcase really good martial arts, and I'm thinking of the Marvel movies as well. They're lacking that grit that these movies have, and it's not just the fact that it's people really taking kicks to the side of the head, and you just them falling, face planting into a metal pipe, all that, really. But I mean, I guess that really does sell how brutal action can be, and that's why I keep on iterating. I watch a superhero movie and it's it's too clean. It's there's a really cool move, but I don't feel the pain anyone's feeling.
Well, I think the industry is probably trying to veer away from that because...
Yeah, of course.
So, those Hong Kong stuntmen and now these Thai stuntmen, they got really hurt. They got hurt pretty bad doing this.
Some paralyzed.
Stuff. Yeah, yeah. I can understand why American stunt unions probably won't allow that, so unfortunately, I think we're never gonna get that sort of grit in an in a Hollywood movie, probably.
Yeah.
Unless it's like, I mean, you know, Tom Cruise is able to do those crazy stunts because he's the producer on those movies, and he's like, no, I'm doing it. I'm doing this for the craft. But like, he's one of the few people that can do it. But he's not like, he's not showing pain to himself being inflicted on screen. He's just, he's doing the daredevil type of stunt.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
So like there's a difference there. I don't think we're going to see pain on screen really like going forward. And it's like a lost art, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I mentioned before, I think that kind of art is kind of died with Panna unless someone else decides like, yeah, let's, you know, like maybe it'll be Africa, right? You know, maybe when they get a surge of martial arts movies, they're just going to start beating each other with metal pipes and just showing the impact of the skull. I don't know.
Right. And then that's why I think it's even more important to revel in movies like this while we can. It's like, I hope it's not dead, right? Mm-hmm. But I do think that this kind of movie is kind of died down, and oh my god, we'll be reaching a whole 10 years since Panna's passed. So but you know, here's us being hopeful that we'll get something like this, you know, down the road. But all right, let's rewind back to 2014 and let's talk about Vengeance of the Assassin in greater detail and watch talk about people playing the combination of MMA and soccer, I guess. I don't know. how do you describe the opening fight scene?
Fight scene isn't even soccer or football. It is kill the man with a ball. That's essentially what is happening. I don't know if you played that as a kid. We played that as a kid.
No.
Which is literally what you're supposed to do. Whoever has the ball, you're supposed to beat the shit out of them. It was a weird game. Yeah, we were.
Are you sure you guys were playing soccer? You weren't just like, let's bully the kid with the ball.
But yeah, if you want to hear us talk more about the crazy action in Vengeance of Assassin, you go check us out on Patreon under Fists of Fail. We're going to go probably an hour, maybe an hour more into this really nonsensical plot, although it is really simple. And we're going to go into more detail of the action because there is a lot of action that we both will probably be in awe of or cringe at the bad CGI at times.
Oh boy, I can't wait till we talk about the train. That is the highlight of the film.
Yep.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the podcast. We're at the point where we give our recommendations, but there's a whole wealth of audio you would be listening to here if you follow us on Patreon. There you can listen to the entire episode, including an exclusive action breakdown of the fights in the movie. But you can still support us by liking us on all the things and watch this and other episodes on YouTube with visual cues to accompany our discussion. And now on to our final thoughts.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Is that Vengeance of an Assassin?
That's Vengeance of an Assassin.
Hey, there we go.
Good movie. I did enjoy this a lot. I mean, it's definitely a step up from, quite unfortunately, a very long string of just okay movies to some god-awful movies that we've been watching. But yeah, man, this really made me kind of sad that, like, yeah, Panem Ridicry is, like, no longer around anymore. Like, yeah, it really was an end of an era, like, now watching this film and really, seeing it finally. But I did enjoy it. I think this movie was, relatively, easy to sit through. It had some missteps in terms of the story, but I don't think it takes away from the overall movie experience, right?
I was confused a little bit in the beginning, and that was frustrating me because I just wanted to understand. But the movie, you really don't care about the story. I hate to say that sometimes, but you're not going to a Panem Ridicry movie to see story. It's all just... Yeah. It almost feels like this is action shot first, and then they tried to cobble a story secondary, and it just didn't work, so that's why it's a mess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it could be multifaceted why this story's not told well. Like, I never felt that Ponyverdict Crimes movies were hard to understand, though.
That's what I mean. Like, really straightforward. I mean, I love BK Knockout. It's really simple. They're forced, you know, they're a stunt team, so that's why they know how to fight.
Yes.
And they're forced to save a friend, so they have to traverse this, you know, this maze, another warehouse, right? They have to traverse it, and there's all these people just waiting for them to beat up.
Right. Yeah. This is the first movie of his that I've watched, and I was like, I actually don't understand some of these. Some of these plot elements and like why they made some decisions. But I think ultimately I'm going to attribute that to his passing. Like, it probably happened sometime towards the end of production, and they probably had some scenes they wanted to fill in, but they just didn't. So, like, you know, maybe things like them suddenly shifting from wanting to kill the girl to just holding her hostage. Like, there must have been a scene they wanted to film, but they just never got around to it. I'm assuming there's a lot of things like
that.
Right. I don't know if it's true or not. But again, I'm still very surprised that the final outcome is still as good as it is. I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with a lot of the action in the movie. Like, I definitely love the Warner. And I'd say that the martial arts in this movie is just... It's good, but I think the stunt work is where the movie kind of shines.
Most definitely, yeah. You're not really watching this for the choreography, per se. Mm-hmm. It is people doing martial arts. It's a Thai action movie. They're using martial arts to hurt the stuntmen.
Yeah.
It's painful. Yeah. That's what you go to watch. You cringe, and there's some sort of evil delight in that, even though they're probably in a lot of pain, but they did that for our entertainment. And there are definitely a few very painful looking hits in here and some painful stunts. So, I mean, he's Ponyverdict Crimes so good at that. Yes, he'll be sorely missed. And I don't think this is a spoiler, because the me verbally saying it does not compare to the visual. Yeah, just watch it, because you get to see our hero, Dan Chu Pong, get hit by a car twice in one take. Like, words cannot describe how painful that is. You feel for the guy. I hope he got a really, really nice bonus, and I hope he took some well-deserved time off after that scene.
Oh man, it's like I'm imagining in like, because he's still making movies to this day. It's just like any time there's a scene with him in a car, he's just like, he just has like PTSD.
Oh, God,
he's like, no cars,
no more. No more.
I'll bike there. I'm not taking an Uber.